Your student radio station on 1251 AM.
This is your role.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to move on now to these submitted questions that have been coming in all week. The candidates will have 60 seconds each to answer these, and we have four questions to answer. So the first question is, what will you do to improve religious tolerance? And I think we'll start with Ellen White.
Of course, the role of a welfare officer has several different roles with regard to religion, of course. I completely, personally, celebrate all different religions, and as a sabbatical officer, I would support all students of whatever religion. I would actively seek to have all different religious festivals celebrated if that's what students wanted. Any problems that students come to me, I will seek to resolve these issues. Personally, I haven't obviously suffered from any issues with religious tolerance. So I'll be honest, I'm unaware if there is a problem. If there is a problem, obviously as a sabbatical officer, this is a very, very important thing. I know that we have a lot of other weeks during term time to deal with Pride Week and other things. We could perhaps organise a religious different festivals and weeks for that. Tolerance, of course, if anybody says anything out of hand, I know that university already has policies against these and has sanctions so that no one can go around, obviously, saying negative things about different religions.
That's 60 seconds up, I'm afraid. I'll have to stop you there. Okay. Amy Swain, what do you think? Amy Swain.
Hi. I think this is where we personally work together with the people in charge of certain religious societies, so that we can create campaigns and events where everyone and everyone's religious beliefs are tolerated and celebrated in a way where everyone can respect everyone else's religions, and that nobody feels like their religion is not being tolerated. I just think it's all about communicating with the right people so that we can get the right message out there in terms of religion and religious tolerances and other welfare issues.
Okay, thank you very much. Who should we have now? Ruth Robinson?
Okay, the first thing that I believe is that in order for people to all coexist in a way where everybody's tolerant to one another, it's so they understand each other. So really what you want to do is raise awareness of different religious groups within other religious groups. And a way for me to do this that makes sense is getting every single group together, getting representatives together, and sort of having a big festival-type gathering. The chaplaincy do something similar to this already, I believe, where they center it around food. And that, to me, extending that, making it into a campus-wide thing, maybe making a whole day of it where you invite people to come, share food, share their experiences, would be a great way to get people to understand and then work toward tolerance. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi. I'm actually part of a religious group on campus, and just from experience, everything's been okay, and we have briefly coordinated with other religions on religious groups on campus, and generally everything's been okay. And I think it's important that this community between different groups is really, really important, and that this relationship is also maintained with the SU, and also you can raise awareness about that this is actually okay on campus. If something were to arise, obviously this is a very important issue. I know that there isn't currently an anti-racist society on campus, but one is being made in the, like at the moment, one's being made in the process. So this would obviously help if something were to arise.
Excellent, thank you. Karis Baxter.
I think religious tolerance is obviously a big issue on campus. And I think all religions can face intolerance from people that don't believe, and I think that's just as bad as from between religions. And it doesn't matter what you believe, whether you're atheist or if you have faith, you should be able to express your views on campus, and I would make sure that all people, all groups on societies, are able to express their views. And again, like the other candidates have said, have awareness weeks, make sure that people celebrate similarities rather than differences. I think it's really easy to find differences in between people, but actually we're all students, we're all at Warwick, so we should celebrate that we're in a community and build our community up as a group rather than viewing ourselves as separate societies.
Excellent, thank you. And now finally, Mr. Lewis Bond.
Thank you. Right, I think this is kind of a twofold question.
So carry on.
All right. We should be thinking about increasing students' tolerance of religious people and religious groups on campus, but also think about increasing the tolerance that some religious groups have towards minority students, because although the majority of the Christian Union, Christian Focus, the Islamic Society, the Hindu Society, all of the societies on campus are wonderful people, sometimes things are miscommunicated and sometimes animosity grows out of a simple misunderstanding. So I think the key question here is really communication, and the best way to increase tolerance on both sides of the divide is to try and get the religious groups together more often, using the same buildings more often, going to the same events, and generally trying to communicate their ideas to each other and to us. So I think that's the best way to go about it.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, my bad, wasn't quite final candidate. Now's the final candidate of Kat Turn. Turhan, over to you.
Hi. I think that there is a genuine problem with religious tolerance on campus, and I think that this can be tackled in two different ways. I think there needs to be more information and there needs to be more collaboration. So in terms of information, we can provide some fantastic talks that I would want to work with the heads of the religious societies to provide informative talks which anybody can come to talk about their religion and to sort of generate debate. I know this is something that happens in the Christian Union and in some of the other societies, religious societies already, and I want to continue that. But in terms of collaboration, I think that one of the most successful socials that I've ever been to of a religious, I'm not personally religious and I'm not part of a religious group, but one of the events that I've been to which I thought was really successful in a collaborative process between religious and non-religious societies was the Christian Union pub quiz, funnily enough. And I thought this was a really successful way of getting...
I'm going to have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds.
Oh, man.
Sorry
That's
about
annoying.
That. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone. We'll move on to question number two now. And question number two, there are four liberation officers. How will you help them do their jobs better, considering the liberation officers are part-time officers whilst you are a full-time officer, should you be elected? So we'll start with Karis Baxter.
I think the key is collaboration and making sure there's communication between me and the part-time liberation officers. For example, during Women's Week, if that's a time when that part-time officer is going to have a lot of deadlines or etc., then I would take on that role. And I also think it's really important to make sure that students within the union know specifically what those part-time officer roles do. I think a lot of the time, the part-time officers then their roles aren't seen as much. And I think that's also an issue for the SAB candidates as well. Like, students don't really know what the SAB candidates do. So I think that's a big thing that I would aim to change across the union, is more information on what the SABs do for the students, whether they're part-time or full-time.
Okay, thank you very much. Ruth Robinson?
This is actually one of the things included in my manifesto. One of the things I want to do is increase communication between full-time SABs and part-time SABs, particularly the liberation officers. And the way that I would do that is actually schedule meetings where I would go and ask them what I could do to help them, rather than wait for them to come to me with their problems, which is sort of the impression that I get that the current situation is, more or less.
Shall I read out the question again? There are four liberation officers. How will you help them do their jobs better, considering the liberation officers are part-time officers whilst you're a full-time one?
The other thing, actually, that I wanted to note when I heard that question first was that they know their own jobs best. And so there's no point in me coming along dictating, saying, oh, I could do this, oh, I could do that, oh, I could take the place of somebody who I don't know what their agenda, their priorities are. So really, to be able to understand what they want, what their needs are, would, I guess, really benefit forwarding their work and doing whatever I can to help them, rather than me trying to dictate, if that makes sense, or trying to enable their work rather than telling them what they should do, because ultimately they got elected for a reason and they should be able to share what they want to do with the student body.
Okay, thank you. Ellen White.
Hi. Obviously, I would support part-time officers in whatever capacity if they needed, because if I got elected as a full-time officer, I'd have much more time to focus on things. So if there was a specific event that they needed help with, I would be more than happy to help. I wouldn't just try and ask them, obviously, to come to me. As a welfare officer, you have to kind of keep your eye on the ball of all the different things that are going on and try and suggest help. Just learning more what their role are, what they need help with. They can explain to me, and then maybe we could put our heads together, come up with a good idea of how we can improve things. Because the question was how you can make their job better. Obviously, trying to see what they're using their time for, what we're using our time for, what we're using our resources for. Liberation is obviously a very, very important issue. So that's pretty much it, really.
Okay, thank you very much. Over to Hava.
Hi. Okay, I think communication is really important, because without communication, and if communication isn't efficient and a two-way, then things just don't get done. And time management is also really important. So if I were to be a sabbatical officer, then I think it's important to have constant meetings with them and make sure they're up to date and know exactly what they're doing in their role. Obviously, they are part-time officers. Having said that, they did take this job on, so they do, from their point of view, do have to commit some time to this role. But of course, I'll be there to support them, meet with them regularly, provide any support that they need. If they need to get in touch with any external bodies or have any specific training, I'll be there to provide that. And or if not, then try to find a way to do that. And just give them all the support and advice.
I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's a minute. What about Amy Swain?
Hi. Well, personally, I self-identify with two of the liberation groups, and I think as welfare officer, it's all about promoting the support system in place for liberation groups and liberation officers. So as welfare officer, I would do my best to support the liberation officers, and then also promote, setting up. This year we've had the launch of the first ever Disability Awareness Week and the launch of Warwick Enable, and then with societies to do with the liberation groups, we can then filter down this support system through to students, so from welfare officer to liberation officers to societies to students, so that there really is this support system in place. Also, as welfare officer, I would also like to increase the support by having better informed pages on the SU website with more links to the SU Advice Centre, University of Services, so that societies, liberation societies, aren't just being linked to and feel like they don't have any support. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Kat, over to you.
I feel as the role of the welfare officer, one of the most important things that you do in the job is to coordinate your part-time liberation officers, because they are the people with the most information about welfare issues and campaigning issues on campus. So I take that role really seriously. I think there are two really practical ways that we can actually help the liberation officers. One, provide them with a space. Why don't we have so much room in SUHQ? There is no reason why they don't have an office which they can hot desk. And number two, they need some training. The liberation officers still aren't given training at the beginning of the year. It just seems so easy. It just, you know, half a day for them to, you know, have some experience in the role. That's all it needs. And I agree with a lot of what the candidates have already said about communication and weekly meetings. I think they're also really important so that we're all on the same page. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Lewis Bond.
I've got kind of three ideas here. I'm thinking more training and also just thinking how to phrase this. There's a committee in the university called the Equality and Diversity Committee, which is where the welfare officer does a lot of their work, proposing and lobbying ideas to the university and trying to get them to carry through. I think it'd be really great if the part-time officers who need a faster track into getting their ideas across had more access to this committee, because as it is, you kind of have to be on the payroll to sit on it. I also think that, frankly, the liberation officers aren't taken seriously enough within their own demographics, and they need more awareness. I mean, the student council is a wonderful place to be if you're a liberation officer, and so are a lot of the societies, to be honest. But if you go into halls and ask, do you know who your liberation officer is, they're going to say, I have no idea. So really, I think awareness is the key here.
Okay, thank you very much. That's everyone, isn't it? Everyone's been this time. Okay, so we'll move on to question number three. How will the candidates try to understand the many and various issues facing currently disabled students at Warwick? What do the candidates currently feel is the most pressing issues? Amy Swain.
In terms of the most pressing issues facing disabled students on campus today, I think they need more assistive technology so that all computers on campus can be used by disabled students and students with specific learning differences. I also think there needs to be better access to not just SU buildings, but also SU events. For instance, at Summer Party, there was very little access for disabled students, and I think it's not just the buildings where this needs to improve, but also events. And also, I would like to see greater differentiation between the specific learning differences so that people with dyspraxia, dyscalculia, and dyslexia aren't just all lumped together in one group when their needs are very different. Can I just ask you the first part of the question?
You want the first part of the question read out again. How will the candidates try to understand the many and various issues currently facing disabled students?
I think having helped out at Disability Awareness Week this week and with the launch of Warwick Enable, I think it's working with the Liberation Officers and helping and students who are on the exec of Warwick Enable to really understand the issues facing disabled students at a student level. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Lewis Bond.
I think, frankly, the answer to this question is ask. I think there really should be an audit carried out to get as many impaired students as possible in, answering questions in the most friendly way possible on how they would like their campus to be improved. Because until you've been in a mobility buggy or a wheelchair or until you've needed hearing assistance, you don't know what environments you need help in. And it's kind of foolish of us to assume that we can decide what they need. As part of my manifesto, it is to carry out a full audit of everyone with any kind of impairment or special need at the university.
Excellent, thank you. Karis Baxter.
I think the most important issue is making sure that the students themselves that feel that they have difficulty getting around university or attending lectures or hearing in lectures, we ask them themselves what they need to help them at university. Like, I think recording lectures, first of all, that would help all students because you can listen to it back, making sure that there's induction loops within in the lecture hall so people who are deaf or have hearing impairments can listen to the lectures better. Again, access is a massive issue on campus. I know that lots of the accommodations don't have lifts in them, so that means if you're a disabled student that wants to live on campus, you're limited to like what accommodations you can stay in, and obviously where your room can be and who you live with and stuff like that. So I think that's a big issue. We need to make sure that all buildings on campus and all areas on campus are more accessible, and routes across campus, like increasing the number of drop curbs around and making it easier, like getting up between, like from social sciences past the chaplaincy and into the arts centre.
I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds. Ellen White.
I'd like to reiterate what everyone before me has said. They sort of stole some of my points, but access, and obviously to gain a better understanding of the issues that disabled students need with, you need to ask disabled students and work with groups and talk to them. Have a open door policy so they can come to you and tell you your issues, especially with regard to helping them with their education, everything sort of been taken. Access, more awareness. It's really an issue of educating people as well as to different kinds of disability and how people can help others with it, how to redistribute resources that we already have, working with the existing societies and organisations on campus. That's pretty much it. Thank you.
That's time up. Yeah. Miss Robinson.
Again, it sort of stems back to my point of there's no point in me standing here and telling you, oh, I should do X, Y, and Z, because I don't have personal experience being an able-bodied person. However, what I can do is I can communicate with the disabled officer and also the disability services within the university to try and get the university and the union working together to better meet everybody's needs. Obviously, physical accessibility is important, making sure that it's prioritised. Like a couple of years ago, we had an issue with the ramp leading into the atrium and that was sorted, identifying if there are other similar areas that need improvement and adjustment. Also, in terms of academic support, obviously, sometimes additional resources are needed, like somebody said, electronic accessibility, stuff like that. In addition, ensuring that there are still willing volunteers who are trained to provide a note-taking service for some students who are not able to take their own notes in lectures and seminars, stuff like that, making sure that people are trained and informed about how to do that, generally just being there to support and listen and try and understand.
Well, I've stopped you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds. Kat Turhan.
So I think that the best way to try and understand the many and various needs of disabled students on campus is by 100% communication. I'm really impressed by the work of Warwick Enable. It's a new society, and I think that as part of my role as welfare officer, I'd be looking to communicate with them and develop them and so that campus knew about the many issues that face disabled students. And also, of course, working with the disabilities officer as well to make sure that happens. In terms of the issues that I think are most important to disabled students, was that the question? Most important to disabled students?
How will the candidates try to understand the many and various issues currently facing students at Warwick? What do the candidates currently see as the most pressing issues?
Pressing issues, okay. The most pressing issues. I think that the fact that we haven't had a disability audit of the university campus is something that needs to be sorted out immediately. We need to lobby the university to make sure this happens. I also think we need to stop segregating our students with learning difficulties by making all computers have assistive technology in the SU and lobby for it to be the case in the union as well.
I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds. Finally, I'd like to pass the microphone over to Hava.
So I'm not going to lie. I don't know all issues that are, let me start again. I don't know everything that could be improved with the university with regards to disability, but I know, for example, that the ramp outside the terrace bar is too steep and not every bus is disabled friendly. But I think the most important way of finding out exactly what needs to be done is by doing focus groups with disabled students, and I think that way we could find out exactly what needs to be done and find out what they find difficult around the university. I also know that there's an external company that can come in and assess how disabled friendly the campus is, and they can, and with their advice, we can then make the campus more disabled friendly. So, and in that respect, make it a lot better for disabled students.
That's 60 seconds. Thank you. And that's all the candidates for that one. So moving on to question four, the final submitted question. How large an issue do the candidates feel that accommodation problems play in the life of students at Warwick? How are the candidates try and resolve these issues? Kat.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yep. How, it's a bit badly worded, this one. Okay, I'll reword it myself. What do the candidates feel that the issues of accommodation play in the lives of disabled students, and how would the candidates resolve these issues?
Issues of accommodation. I think that in living in halls in my first year, I remember routes not being particularly accessibly friendly, if you like, and I think that's something that needs to change. I think if it's possible, we need to start lobbying the university to have more lifts in accommodation so that disabled students can get around much more easily. And I think that's my main point on that one.
You're sorry? Oh, okay, thank you. Lewis Bond.
We are obviously going to face the problem that modifying existing accommodation to make it more accessibility friendly is going to cost a lot, and the university isn't going to like that. What we can do, which is slightly more realistic, is to make sure that the new accommodation, which, let's face it, they're building every year, is definitely accessibility friendly. And then we can work on making sure that the older accommodation is better for the students who need it.
Okay, thank you very much. Karis Baxter.
Yeah, I raised this in my other answer. A lot of the accommodation on campus isn't accessible. There isn't lifts in the buildings. So that's something that obviously is going to be expensive to change, but we can. I think in some of the accommodation it would be possible to put lifts in, and especially in the new accommodations that are being built, lifts need to be put in. And also the accommodation needs to be made affordable for all students. Like, the cost of rent is rising, and as nice as the new accommodations are, there also needs to be affordable, nice accommodation built. Like, the quality between Whitefields and Bluebell is kind of unacceptable, really. There shouldn't be that much of a difference. All accommodations should meet a certain standard for all students, as well as being accessible. It's not difficult. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Ruth Robinson.
I think obviously accommodation is probably something that new students worry about the most when they come to university. Worrying, have they got a place in halls, have they not? If they don't find a place in halls, then it'll be much, much harder to sort of adjust to the very beginning of university life. Their sort of first couple of weeks could be really unsettled, not knowing what's happening. Actually, one of my friends is telling me all about her problems with accommodation that she found when she was a fresher, because it was at the point when the university was really oversubscribed and they put her out, they shouldn't have accommodation, basically. So actually the welfare officer at the time was really great and supported her through that, along with a whole bunch of other people who had a similar problem. Again, obviously the problems can continue on into partway through first year, finding houses in second year, stuff like that. Again, being there to support students is the best thing I think that any welfare officer could do. So what I would want to do is put two housing days on, one in term one, like the one we had this year, to make people realize, look, you don't have to stress about housing. You will find a house in year two. It will be fine. Then in second year...
I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds up. Can we have Ellen
White? I
have more.
Check my manifesto.
Ellen White.
Yeah, as issues already mentioned with lifts and things, access, because obviously if you are severely disabled, it significantly limits the amount of accommodations that you can apply to, which is additional stress as well. One of my manifesto pledges actually talks about accommodation in reference to like isolation and loneliness, because if there are many different kinds of disability, not all of them may mean that you can't stay in certain halls. It might not be an access problem. So therefore there are other problems with, we all know university can be a very intimidating and scary place, so it can take the smallest thing to trigger perhaps you not going to a social event or making friends as quickly or as easily as other people. So providing services for students with differing abilities shouldn't mean that you differentiate the students and separate them. We should always work towards integrating and helping students provide better services.
I'm sorry, that's 60 seconds up. I'll have to stop you there. Over to you, Hava.
Sorry, can you repeat the question again?
Yep. How large an issue do the candidates feel that accommodation problems play in the lives of students? How much of a problem is an accommodation for disabled students, and how would you try and resolve this, these issues? How would you resolve the issues?
I think it's important, again, to actually speak to disabled students and find out exactly what the exact issues are, and then to work with them and work with the university to try to make, to try and improve the facilities in accommodation that are on campus. So I know that in some accommodations that they do have specifically disabled friendly rooms, and I think it's important that when, if they do, I know that they are planning to rebuild some accommodations, for example, to, I think they're knocking down Whitefields, and to make sure that when they, in the process of doing this, that the disabled friendly rooms are adequate. And I think, again, it's just important to speak to disabled students to know exactly what's going on.
Okay, I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. That's 60 seconds. Amy Swain.
Okay.
I'm going to attempt to answer this question in three parts. In terms of accommodation for disabled students, I think that as well as this, one of the things that disabled students definitely need are personal evacuation plans in case of a real emergency. In terms of students living on campus, I do think there should be more affordable accommodation and also any increases in existing accommodation to go up no more than in line with increases in prices in houses in Leamington, for instance. And in terms of students living in off-campus accommodation, I would like to see more support for off-campus students, definitely in terms of housing, and really support them on problems to do with landlords and estate agencies that aren't getting back to them and aren't resolving problems with their housing, really fighting for students with those issues and really providing a voice and support to them. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's the end of the submitted questions. Now we're going to move on to questions from the floor. We'll have about 10 minutes on this, 10 to 12 minutes, depending on the time. So has anybody got any questions they want to fire at the candidates? And just to clarify, they can't be candidate specific, so whatever you ask, the candidates will each have 60 seconds to answer. Does anyone want to start us off? Any questions for the candidates? None at all. Oh, you, sir, over there.
Since the recent Mental Health Awareness Week has brought it back to the forefront, what do all the candidates think of the current provision for mental health care, and do they think it could be improved? How? If so.
Okay, does everyone hear that one? No. Could you repeat the question, please? Could I ask that you repeat the question? Tim, turn around.
Okay, I'll give you the short version this time. Can mental health care on campus be better?
Karis Baxter.
I think the shortest answer to that question is yes, it definitely can. First of all, I think the personal tutor system needs to be improved. So personal tutors have the right advice and information to give to students, and they can refer students on to the right places to get help. Like if your personal tutor isn't approachable, I think you can get left and you can fall through the cracks, and I think there can definitely be more help on campus, especially in terms of stress and then that leading to depression and anxiety, which can be a huge damage to your degree. So there definitely can be more provision, and I would say that the key way to sort it out is giving personal tutors better training and more time so they can give the right information to their students.
Excellent, thank you. Amy Swain, what do you think?
Okay, yes, I definitely do think the mental health services can be improved. I think that's true of most of the services on campus, especially in terms of mental health assessments, where the current waiting time is 2 weeks, and I definitely think that could be cut. One of the ways in which we can cut this, I think, is also to improve the promotion of the mental health services. There are a lot of mental health services available, lots of different kinds, but what the problem is that they're not efficiently promoted and students don't know about them. And I think if we can more effectively link students to these services, that's how we can really improve the support they give to students.
Thank you. Lewis Bond.
Okay, I have a lot to say about this, but I'm just going to pick a couple of salient points because most of my negative experiences with the university have been to do with mental health. The personal tutor system, too much is placed on the personal tutors, and frankly, that doesn't happen in all faculties. Sometimes people from the science, maths faculties, they have a personal tutor, but they never see them, they're unable to see them, they've got no kind of pastoral support in that manner. The counselling waiting time does need to be cut, but that's going to be a difficult fight because the university doesn't want to spend more money on it. What we need to make the university realise is they make money from us completing our education and getting a degree. If we're dropping out, and there are very high dropout rates in some departments because of mental health issues, then they need to up their game in care and make sure that the students actually are invested in and carry on producing the work that they need to. Let's see. In terms of the NHS mental health provision in Coventry, there's not an awful lot we can do about it, but we can promote the services that are there. For example, cognitive behavioural therapy.
I'll have to stop you there, I'm afraid. 60 seconds up. Cat turn.
as with the other candidates, I 100% believe that the mental health facilities on campus need to be improved. Number one, we need to lobby the university to get the counselling waiting list shortened. There is no reason why people should be waiting 3 weeks to see a counsellor. It's outrageous. Number two, efficiency in promoting the mental health awareness thing, something that Amy said, I think is really, really important. One of the things that I really want to do if I become your welfare officer is to get the information about Nightline, about the mental health services we provide on campus, into a booklet for students, which they receive in their goodie bags as soon as they come to the university, so that students know exactly where their support network is from day one, term one, week one. Finally, I also think that we need to, we have a really strong LGB support group. I think we need to have the same for trans students as well. I think that's something else that we can really do to improve mental health on campus.
Okay, thank you. Ellen White, tell us what you think.
Yes, as well, definitely. I think it's an important issue, and the existing services need to be expanded and improved, like Nightline, for example. Additionally, the personal tutor as well. I mean, I don't know about some people, but when you meet your personal tutor maybe once or perhaps twice a term, it's quite hard to build any kind of a relationship with them that if you had a problem, you'd be able to tell them. So I'm sure people kind of bottle issues up as well, which as I talked about in my point earlier in halls as well, when you come first, it might be quite hard for you to find someone that you can talk to and confide in. So yes, also training for perhaps students, like everyday students, to just look out amongst people in their course to see if they can notice any signs of people perhaps beginning to become depressed, or around exam periods, going around the library, talking to people during their revision, asking them, are they okay, are you dealing with your exams, are you revising?
I'm sorry, that's time up. Have a over to you.
Okay, so in short, again, yes. This is actually one of my big manifesto points, is that the counselling service really does need to be improved. Yes, the waiting list is very long, and the counselling service is understaffed. It's not just that, it's that also there's been an increase in the number of people using the counselling service in the past year, and the staff in the counselling service need to have different ways of actually using therapy. So I know that some people will use different, there are different approaches to therapy, and some counsellors use different ones, and this information isn't actually conveyed when students apply for counselling. So I think this is quite important. But this isn't just about the counselling service. I think it's also really important to make aware of the different facilities of mental health awareness around the Students' Union, so make use of the advice centre.
I'm sorry, I'll have to stop you there. That's 60 seconds up. And finally, Ruth Robinson.
Okay, there are actually a wide range of student support services that we have at Warwick, and I don't believe that they're all being used as much as they could be, or necessarily in sort of the most efficient way. I think one of the big things that we can do is to increase access to mental health support services, increase awareness of them. And one of the ways I would do this is have an actual welfare tab on the SU website. You'll notice it says the Advice Centre, but it doesn't actually have a centralised listing of all the mental health support services that we have here. So provide that so that people can see it from day one. Also have a stand at the Freshers' Fair. So again, from day one, people can see we have a lot of services. And they're not just there for crisis management. They're there to be used at any point if anybody is suffering from a mental health issue. It doesn't have to build up and up and up and require a counsellor necessarily. But then if it did, on the other hand, the counselling service is overstretched. And I believe it's underfunded. And what I would like to do is actually lobby the university to put more funding into the counselling service and other support services as well, including, obviously, it's sort of something that's close to my heart, doing Nightline. Trying to get more funding in there to get just more resources there to help
there.
Everybody, really.
That's time up. Okay, well, thank you very much. Is there any more questions from the floor? No more? Be your last chance. Right, okay, in that case, we'll have a brief break for about 15 minutes and we'll resume at 6:15 for the education officer.
Find
us on Facebook. Search for Raw 1251 AM and get connected with your student radio station.